wonderful for me to return here to People's Baptist. I don't want to say I see many old friends, because I'm not talking about our chronological ages. I see many friends, brothers and sisters, that I have known for quite some time. And some of you are new to me. I'm Pastor Steve Barrows. I pastored down at North Spencer Baptist Church for a couple of days. I retired last June 30th. And by July 2nd, I figured out what retirement is. Retirement is that stage of life where you keep working, but nobody pays you anymore. And you work harder when you also have a full-time job. I figured that out. It didn't take long. There are... I got to turn on. Oh, look at that. I still have the red light.
Better. Do I need to start all over again? No. Please don't. Please don't. I do have a rather boisterous voice, and so I was pretty sure that you could have heard me anyway. Not that I deliberately left it off. So, we're at a place coming in the church year that we're approaching Easter. Clearly, you all know that. You have an Easter egg meeting right after church here this morning. You have an Easter egg hunt coming up. We know that Good Friday is around the corner, and of course, Easter Sunday on the 17th. You know, many people have favorite things associated with the church year. Christmas is a major church holiday that we recently celebrated together, saints, brothers and sisters throughout the world. There are a lot of people that have favorite church movies around certain times of the year. Do you have a favorite Christmas movie? Many of you might. Favorite Christmas movie? Well, back at Christmas time, I saw a news article that said many people's favorite Christmas movie is Die Hard. It happened. The setting was at Christmas time. That's probably as close as you get. Although there's some deliverance, I suppose, at the end. Well, as we approach Easter, and we have probably many of us favorite Easter movies, we have favorite Easter stories, I'm going to introduce you to this morning to a story afresh, which is an old story, yet not an old story, because I dare say that probably none of you have thought about it as an Easter story. And that's the book of Ruth. Now, I'm going to start right up front and ask your patience. I need your indulgence for most of this message, because it is going to seem unfamiliar. It is going to seem even crookedy, because we're going to read the entire book of Ruth, but we're not going to read it the way that you normally read the book of Ruth. And I'll just tell you right up front, having watched faces when I've done this once before, that if I don't tell you, it's going to seem weird. You're not going to stick with me. So having said that, I will tell you that it's not until the very end, perhaps, that this is all going to make sense to you. So that's why I need your indulgence. I need your patience to bear with me as we look this morning in a different way at the book of Ruth. Because, come on, not, fine. What do we know about the book of Ruth? This is an old story, old in the sense that it's part of the Old Testament. It's one that we probably have heard of before. It's one that we know a fair amount about. It's set in the time of the Judges, approximately 1320 B.C. It may have been written by Samuel. We know from verse 4 in chapter 1 that it covers a period greater than 10 years. I've written here that it's the only book of the Bible that's wholly devoted to the story of a woman. Now, you might say, well, wait a minute. There's Esther, Esther is a book that's devoted to the story of a woman, but there are a lot of other characters in Esther, more so than in Ruth, where the book focuses on Ruth. Not that there aren't other characters in Ruth. Now, we also know that the book of Ruth introduces us to Boaz as an Old Testament type that is a picture of Christ. We see Boaz introduced that way. And we look at some major themes in Ruth that we've seen before. We look at the theme of loyalty. We look at a theme of redemption. And we look forward, as we get to the end of the book, we look forward to the line of Christ. And so as we read the book of Ruth in our modern day Western frame of mind, we come to the end of the book and we say, aha, I've got the main point. The main point is that the book of Ruth points to the lineage and the coming of David, which leads us to the line of Christ. And generally, we're pretty satisfied to walk away with that. But when we look at the book of Ruth from a Hebrew perspective, that is, taking ourselves out of our Western culture for a few minutes, looking at it from a Hebrew perspective, we find that there's another point that we can miss easily. That is, we see it, but we can gloss over it, and we miss its significance. And that's what I'd like to bring out today. You see, what do our stories have? Well, they have a beginning, they have a middle, they have an end, they have an introduction, they have a main body, they have a conclusion. And if we read the book of Ruth, we think we see all these things too. Why? Because we do. We see that our stories tend to set up some form of tension or conflict, and then they explain how this tension or conflict is resolved. And we see that in the book of Ruth. Now, think about this for a minute. Any genre of literature that you enjoy generally is written for a target audience. If you like mysteries, the target audience is people that like mysteries. If you like romance novels, the target audience is people that like romance novels. If you're a historian, you may not like romance novels, except for the parts that accurately portray history. So there's a target audience involved here. In the book of Ruth, the target audience is not us in our Western European culture. In the book of Ruth, the target audience was Israelites, Hebrews, who understood the book differently than we would tend to understand it. Here's a typical summary of the book of Ruth. You might find this in any introduction to Ruth about the famine and the trip, the sojourn into Moab in the first five verses. There's a sad return home in the rest of chapter 1. Ruth goes out and she gleans grain in the fields of Boaz in chapter 2. Ruth follows the counsel of Naomi in chapter 3. Boaz bargains with a relative for Ruth and for property in verses 1 to 12 of chapter 4. In verse 13, Ruth and Boaz get married. Then Obed is born, the grandfather of David, in 13 to 16. And then we're given the rest of the genealogy of David in 17 to 22. We may have some familiarity with that, but that's not how the Hebrews would have seen it. And so we're going to look at Ruth today from a Hebrew perspective. And to do that, we're going to read Ruth beginning in verse 1 of chapter 1. And if you'd like to follow on, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to be skipping all over the place. But it's going to be within the book of Ruth. So you only have to keep track of four chapters. I can do that on my left hand. Four. I got them. Chapter 1 in the book of Ruth. Here's the introduction, and what we're going to read is the devastation of Naomi's family. Now it came about in the days when the judges governed that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the land of Moab with his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem in Judah. Now they entered the land of Moab and remained there. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They took for themselves Moabite women as wives. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. And they lived there about 10 years. Then both Mahlon and Chilion died, and the woman was bereft of her two children and her husband. So there's the devastation of Naomi's family. Skip to chapter 4. And go right to verse 13. You see, we're jumping from the introduction to the conclusion. 4:13. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and he went into her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, "Blessed is the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer today, and may his name be famous in Israel. So also may he be to you a restorer of life and a sustainer of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you and is better to you than seven sons has given birth to him." Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap, and he became his nurse. The neighboring women gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi," so they named him Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now these are the generations of Perez. To Perez was born Hezron, and to Hezron was born Ram, and to Ram Amminadab, and to Amminadab was born Nashon, and to Nashon Salmon, and to Salmon was born Boaz, and to Boaz Obed, and to Obed was born Jesse, and to Jesse David. In the introduction, Naomi's family is lost, and Elimelech's line is ended. Ruth's tragic marriage is a tragedy because her husband is sickly. He dies. They have no heir. Both of Naomi's sons die. And these past events set the stage for the story. Now, we've already read the conclusion. And in the conclusion, Naomi's family is restored and Elimelech's line is raised up once again. Ruth now has a happy marriage to a husband who's not sickly and who dies, but who is robust and healthy, and she has a son. Naomi, the daughter-in-law, Ruth, is now better to Naomi than seven sons. Remember, in the beginning, she had none. 2-0, devastation. Now, Naomi is better to her than seven sons. And these future events show the story's significance to us in the coming of Messiah, the coming of Jesus Christ through the line of David. What I've done here is to set up a series of contrasts between the introduction and the comparison. You see how this is working? And that's what's going to continue. So you'll see us continue to compare and to contrast various parts of the story. And now we go back to chapter 1. And we pick up in verse 6. And we read down to the first half of verse 19, 6 to 19, and here we read, "Then she arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return from the land of Moab." This, of course, is Naomi. "For she had heard in the land of Moab that the Lord had visited his people in giving them food. So she departed from that place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, 'Go, return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. May the Lord grant that you may find rest, each in the house of her husband.' And then she kissed them, And they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, no, but we will surely return with you to your people. But Naomi said, return, my daughters. Why should you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Return, my daughters, go, for I'm too old to have a husband. If I said I have hope, if I should even have a husband tonight and also bear sons, would you therefore wait until they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is harder for me than for you, for the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. And they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And then she said, behold, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or turn back from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me, and worse, if anything but death parts you and me. And when she saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. So they both went until they came to Bethlehem. This next portion of the story brings us to, did I black that out? Ah, all right. To two of Naomi's relatives deliberating whether or not to support Naomi. Now, this was Orpah, and this was Ruth. We're going to see this again when we go back to chapter 4 in the first 12 verses. Both initially agree. Both Orpah and Ruth say, no, we're going to go with you. But one turns back when the idea of marriage is mentioned. Orpah turns back. She says, well, if I can't get remarried, not that that's a direct quote from the book, mind you, but she's a young woman. She has two prospects in front of her. Return to her own people or to stay with her mother-in-law, and that's it. That's the end of life for her as she knows it, except to simply remain with Naomi. Well, one, Ruth, stands by Naomi with that very eloquent speech that we like from the book of Ruth, that where you go, I will go. And where you die, I will die. There's a lodge in there, okay? What a speech. What a speech of loyalty and love and devotion. So Ruth stands by Naomi. Orpah goes back to her people. And so Ruth then is blessed. There's a blessing spoken for her that we just read. But here's what this means. This means that as Ruth has made a decision to support Naomi, it's very unlikely that she's going to ever marry again. That's the choice that she's made. Orpah was faced with the same choice, but she made the other decision, and she went home. But that's her choice. So now turn back to chapter 4, verses 1 to 12. And let's look at this situation again, where we have two of Naomi's relatives deliberating whether to support Naomi or not. Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there, and behold, the close relative of whom Boaz spoke was passing by. So he said, turn aside, friend, sit down here. And he turned aside and he sat down. He took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit down here. And so they sat down. Then he, Boaz, said to his closest relative, Naomi, who has come back from the land of Moab, has to sell the piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. So I thought to inform you, saying, buy it before those who are sitting here and before the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one closer but you to redeem it, and I am after you. And he said, I will redeem. Well, then Boaz said, on the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also acquire Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of the deceased, in order to raise up the name of the deceased in his inheritance. The closest relative said, well, I cannot redeem it for myself because I jeopardize my own inheritance. Redeem it for yourself. You may have my right of redemption, for I cannot redeem it. Now, this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning the redemption and the exchange of land to confirm any matter. A man removed his sandal and gave it to another, and this was the manner of attestation in Israel. So the closest relative said to Boaz, "Buy it for yourself." And he removed his sandal. Then Boaz said to the elders and all the people, "You are witnesses today that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech and all that belonged to Chilion and Mahlon. Therefore, I have acquired Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, to be my wife in order to raise up the name of the deceased in his inheritance so that the name of the deceased will not be cut off from his brothers or from the court of his birthplace. You are witnesses today." And all the people who were in the court and the elders said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, both of whom built the house of Israel. And may you achieve wealth in Ephrathah and become famous in Bethlehem. Moreover, may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah through the offspring which the Lord will give you by this young woman." Here are the comparisons and the contrasts. All that you just saw is on that top in the small print. But looking at verses 1 to 12 and 4, both initially agree. The two relatives, Boaz and the closer relative, who remains unnamed. But once the idea of marriage comes up, one of them says, nope, I'm going to nope on out of here. You marry Ruth. We don't know, but he might have been thinking, she's a Moabitess. And the Lord said, "No Moabite shall enter into the assembly unto the fourth generation." We don't know what he was thinking, except he did say, "Oh, I got to protect my own inheritance, so I'm not going to marry her. You do it." So one stands by Naomi, that's Boaz, and speaks eloquently about how he will take upon himself the burden of purchasing the land and the burden of purchasing with the land a wife who is, by the way, a Moabitess. And again, a blessing is spoken for Ruth. When the people said, "Look at how many kids we help you to have. We want you to have as many children as Rachel and Leah." As Israel was raised up, in supporting Naomi now, where it was so hopeless before, this means that Ruth will remarry, not the prospect that she had at all before. Well, let's go back to chapter 1. And we'll pick up in the middle of verse 19 again. And we'll look at how they come back to Bethlehem in emptiness and hopelessness. "And when they had come to Bethlehem, all the city was stirred because of them. And the woman said, 'Is this Naomi?' And she said to them, 'Do not call me Naomi, call me Mara. For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi?'" Which means pleasant. "Why do you call me Naomi? Since the Lord has witnessed against me and the Almighty has afflicted me." So Naomi returned, and with her Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, who returned from the land of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Keep pressing that too hard, I guess. So here's the setting. The setting we just read about, it's at the beginning of the barley harvest. And here's this surprised question of identity. Is this Naomi? Now remember, she's been gone 10 years. I'm not saying that after 10 years people look different. I'm not saying that. When I pastored down in North Spencer, my policy was every woman in church was 29, and it stayed that way for 21 years. Nevertheless, in Bethlehem, there was a surprise. Is this Naomi? Naomi says, "I left full, but Yahweh brought me back empty. I left full, but I came back empty. And so here are Naomi and Ruth coming into Bethlehem in despair. But let's go back to chapter 4. The very beginning of chapter 4 now, the first 12 verses. Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there, and behold, we already just did that, didn't we? Never mind. Let's go to chapter 3. Despite what my slide says. Chapter 3. Then Naomi and her mother-in-law said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you that it may be well with you? Now is not Boaz our kinsman with whose maids you were? Behold, he winnows barley at the threshing floor tonight. Wash yourself, therefore, and anoint yourself and put on your best clothes, and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. It shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will tell you what you shall do." So she said to her, "All that you say, I will do." So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law had commanded her. When Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. And she came secretly and uncovered his feet and lay down. It happened in the middle of the night that the man was startled and bent forward, and behold, a woman was lying at his feet. "Who are you?" he said. And she answered, "I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative." Then he said, "May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether rich or poor. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence. Now, if it is true that I'm a close relative, that is true. However, there is a relative closer than I. Remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, good, let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning." So she lay down at his feet until morning and rose before anyone could recognize one another. And he said, "Do not let it be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." Again he said, "Give me the cloak that is on you and hold it." So she held it, and he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. And then she went into the city. When she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "How did it go, my daughter?" And she told her all that the man had done for her. She said, "These 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said, 'Do not go to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Then she said, "Wait, my daughter, until you know how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest until he has settled it today." Now the setting has shifted. Now it's at the end of the barley harvest. There's still another surprised question of identity. Who's there? Boaz wants to know, who is at my feet? Ruth left from Naomi empty, but returns full with 6 measures of barley that Boaz had given to her. For he said, "Do not return empty." She came empty, she left full. And so Ruth, instead of her and Naomi in the beginning coming into Bethlehem in despair, Ruth comes into Bethlehem with good news and hope, both for herself and for her mother-in-law, Naomi. Well, let's see. I'm counting up. This is very difficult for me because I went to school in Candor. I almost need a calculator. We've done chapter 1, haven't we? We did chapter 4. We just did chapter 3, and that leaves us with, help me out here, 2, chapter 2. Let's look at chapter 2. Here's the point. From a Hebrew perspective, this is the pivotal point in the book of Ruth. From a Hebrew perspective, the pivotal point is not that we got to the genealogy of David, although that's important. From a Hebrew perspective, the pivotal point is chapter 2. Notice how we've been going back and forth with the comparisons and the contrasts. Where did I get that? That's how the Hebrews wrote. And so if you were listening to this story in Hebrew, your mind would have been trained to listen for the comparisons and the contrasts. And as you heard the whole story from start to finish, you would think, oh, I heard this in chapter 1, this in chapter 4, this in chapter 1, this in chapter 4. I heard this in chapter 1, this in chapter 3. Oh, chapter 2 must be pretty important. So let's turn to chapter 2. Now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, please let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I might find favor. And she said to her, go, my daughter. So she departed and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now behold, Boaz came into from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, may the Lord be with you. And they said to him, may the Lord bless you. And he said to them, whose young woman is this? The servant in charge of the reapers replied, she is the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab. And she said, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. Thus she came and has remained from morning until now. She has been sitting in the house for a little while. Then Boaz said to Ruth, listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay here with my maids. Let your eyes be on this field, which they reap, and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. And when you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw. Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your sight that you should take notice of me, for I am a foreigner? Boaz replied to her, all that you have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me, and how you left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and came to a people you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. Then she said, I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and indeed have spoken kindly to your maidservants, though I am not like one of your maidservants. At mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here, that you may dip the bread and your bread in the vinegar, so that she sat beside the reapers, and he served her roasted grain, and she ate and was satisfied and had some left. Then she rose to glean. Boaz commanded his servant, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not insult her. Also, you shall purposely pull out for her grain from the bundles, and leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field until evening, and then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. She took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw that she had gleaned. She also took it out and gave Naomi what she had left after she was satisfied. Her mother-in-law then said to her, where did you glean today, and where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, the name of the man with whom I've worked today is Boaz. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, may he be blessed of the Lord who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and the dead. And again Naomi said to her, this man is our relatives. He is one of our closest relatives. And then Ruth the Moabite said, furthermore, he said to me, you shall stay close to my servants until you have finished all my harvest. And Naomi said to her, to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his maid so that others do not fall upon you in another field. So she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law. How is this the pivotal portion of the book of Ruth? Well, here's the meeting of Ruth and Boaz in chapter 2. The greatest truth in the book of Ruth. Wonderful lessons abound here. But the greatest truth in this book is this. Just like Ruth had to meet the kinsman redeemer to lift her from hopelessness and despair, we have to meet the kinsman redeemer and enter into a lifelong relationship with him. That's the pivotal truth of the book of Ruth. And that's what makes this a wonderful story leading up to Easter. You see, what do we celebrate next week? Palm Sunday, right? And what did Jesus do? He rode into Jerusalem on a donkey. People who had never seen him met him. They heard of him. They came to believe in him. And when they believed in him, they entered into a lifelong relationship with him. That the marriage of Boaz and Ruth is a symbol for that lifelong relationship of a hopeless person with their kinsman redeemer. Of us in our hopeless and sinned, corrupted state, meeting Jesus Christ, our kinsman redeemer. And then we have hope. And then we have blessing. And what a glorious tale that is to lead us to Easter. That like Ruth, we have to meet the kinsman redeemer, who for us is Jesus Christ, our closest brother. Jesus, our kinsman redeemer. Let's pray. Almighty Father God, we bow before you today, and we give you thanks that, Lord, so many here have met you, our kinsman redeemer. Lord, as we approach Easter, there will be attention on churches through events such as the Easter egg hunt here the day before. May you bless that time to your glory, that children and their parents might be introduced to Jesus Christ, their kinsman redeemer. Thank you, Lord, for choosing us to meet you. For while we were yet sinners, you loved us. And we thank you and praise you for it. Bless the rest of this day as we finish our formal worship here, but continue to worship you with family and friends and with you yourself, Lord Jesus. May you continue to protect Pastor Brian and his family. Give them a wonderful vacation, a time of refreshing and recharging. And Lord, may you use us to do the works that you have ordained from beforehand that we should walk in them, all for your glory, that you would be pleased. As we give you our thanks and praises now in Jesus' mighty, mighty name, amen.